When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Get in zone, AutoZone. Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination. Get in zone, AutoZone.
It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. Have some fun.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. Schmelk, Dottino, Meadow, you... 201-939-4513. We'll probably take your calls in around 20 minutes or so, but if you want to get on the line, you can. Don't get in too early if you don't want to be on hold. So give us a call. We're on Giants.com and the Giants mobile site at Giants.com/BigBlueKickoff. Check us out. And guys, no practice today. It's an off day for the team. They've had three straight days of practice. One long padded practice, one medium, I would say.
Yes.
A little bit shorter padded practice, and then a really short shells practice yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine the next two practices, Thursday and Friday, before the second preseason game, will probably not be padded, is my guess. Actually, I think I have a
one
list here. Let me see.
I think
what
one padded, one shell.
I can look that up. I don't have it in front of me. But I imagine those will probably be a lot of carded things to get ready for the game. Maybe at least Friday's practice, which I wouldn't expect to be much. I think we have a chance to get something fun tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how that goes. So we'll continue in coverage of that. Then, of course, you have the joint practice against the Jets next week, which I imagine will be our last kind of big taste of competitive practice before we start getting to real deal regular season preparations. Jeff and I talked yesterday about a couple different things, and I want to get your guys' takes on them too, Paul. We mentioned the Giants Ring of Honor stuff, but since neither Jeff or I, you know, I was younger when these guys all played in the, you know, 80s and early 90s and stuff like that. And, you know, Jeff wasn't really, you know, he was playing. He wasn't, you know, playing against those guys necessarily.
Would he remember anyway?
Well, that's a good point, actually. he actually joked about that yesterday. So just give me your take on the guys going to the Ring of Honor, Lance. You can, too, before we head on to a couple different topics.
Well, you figure that six Super Bowl rings between the four guys who were here yesterday, a total of seven went in. We know the trainer, Ronnie Barnes, who, by the way, one of the few people in this building who predates me, John. He started here in 1976.
And by the way, he looks like he's like 45 years old.
How does he do it?
It's amazing. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, it's insane.
Yeah, it's a stressful job, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's long hours.
In charge of all those players.
Yeah, yeah,
I got a feeling.
He looks great, man.
He must like go into an oxygen chamber every night.
Yeah.
It's got to be. It's got to be.
Well, he's got to keep up with the latest anyway.
Yeah, he does. It's true.
Makes sense.
You know what? Forget about all these infomercials that we see for these people trying to turn back the clock. Ronnie Barnes has the secret of youth. There's no question.
Absolutely. Anyway.
So Ronnie started here as an assistant. I believe he might have even been part-time back in 1976. So he predates me by 7 years.
I'm surprised he hasn't been able to fix you over the past 35
yeah, okay.
years.
So
that's an impossible
yeah,
task.
Correct.
But
Ronnie can pull that
The
off.
Reason I bring it up is because I don't think that there's any medical person in the National Football League who has a tenure as he does.
Yeah, I don't know about
I
that.
Think he holds the record.
Could be. I have no idea.
And he's part of the National Athletic Association Trainers Hall of Fame
yes,
also.
Correct.
So he is multi-honored. And so this was really fitting for him. So I'm really, really glad. Jim Johnson, who was the trainer back in the days of the sneakers game when Wellington Mara was owning the team decades ago, is also in the Ring
yep.
of Honor.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's Ronnie. We all know that Jimmy Patton was a five-time All-NFL safety, was on all those teams in the late 50s and early 60s. Quite frankly, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. He is not, but, you know, he was a staple with Dick Lynch in those secondaries. tremendous hitter, big-time hitter. And then, obviously, the other one is Kyle Rote, who was drafted out of SMU as a running back, had a bad knee injury, spent the first 2 years as a running back, then converted to wide receiver, went to four Pro Bowls, I believe, as a wide receiver, was part of the Tittle teams in the early 60s, then became a very, very well-known broadcaster.
Apparently a much beloved teammate. A bunch of teammates like named their kids after him.
Oh,
they had like people loved that guy. Apparently.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It was because of him, Gifford, and Summerall, and DeRogatis, in the early 60s into the mid-60s, all those guys were big-time Giants players during the Giants' heyday. All of them wound up graduating into broadcasting. And so they started to nickname them the boys from Mara Tech. The Giants became known as Mara Tech.
Oh, yeah, I never heard that. Interesting.
Because they would graduate from the field into the broadcast booth.
Interesting.
Summerall, Rote, DeRogatis, Gifford, all those guys. So, anyway, bottom line is that, you know, Patton and Rote are no longer with us. So the other four players who were here yesterday, Hampton and Morris and Marshall and Anderson, all spoke with us. And I think the thing about those four guys,
and by the
me,
way, if you want to hear those, go to the John's Huddle podcast. It's up there right now. Paul did interviews with all four of those guys.
Got a quick comment from each one of them, although a lengthy interview with Otis talking about this year's team.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I think the common thread, besides that they were all champions guys, is that each one of those guys was not just part of a championship team, but they were key members, like heart and soul kind of guys. Joe Morris ran for 21 touchdowns in 1986. Think about that. 21 touchdowns. At the time, it was an NFL record for halfbacks for a single season.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
21.
I knew he had 21. I didn't realize it was a record at
it's
that time.
It's insane.
Right.
Okay? His back-to-back seasons in 85, 86, I mean, what did he run for? 2,800 yards, I think, over those two seasons combined.
Yeah.
He was an absolute beast. We called him Little Joe. And trust me, no matter what we talk about with those Giants defensive teams during those heydays of Parcells, Little Joe, he was the heart and soul of that offense. He really was. Because
Lance would have loved Joe Morris back in the day.
Without a doubt.
He would have been one of Lance's guys.
See,
no
because
question.
Phil's best target was Bavaro.
Right.
His tight end was his key passing weapon. It was all about Little Joe. So he was the heart and soul of the offense. Quickly, the other guys, we all know what Otis Anderson did in the third quarter of Super Bowl 25 against the Bills.
Now, most of the damage in his career was with the Cardinals, but his Super Bowl moment was with the Giants. Yep.
Rookie of the year with the Cardinals, multiple 1,000-yard seasons, comes to the Giants, was a comeback player of the year, and was a Super Bowl MVP. When he retired, he was top 10 all-time with over 10,000 yards rushing. He was also among the top five active running backs at the time in all-time pass receptions. People did not realize Otis Anderson was a very dangerous threat coming out of the backfield.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
It's to me, one of the reasons why he should get much more consideration for the Hall of Fame than he does.
Paul thinks ex-Giant should be in Hall of Fame. News at 11.
Stunning.
Well.
No, I'm just teasing you.
In any event. So that then, and of course, without Otis, that third quarter drive against the Bills does not happen.
And then you have Rodney, who was basically the Giants' all-time leading rusher until Tiki Barber came around.
Well, yeah. And the thing about Rodney, he was drafted in 90, so he was the starting running back and kind of paired with O.J. Anderson, and then he broke his foot. In the postseason, and Otis had to carry the load and wound up leading them to the Super Bowl win. Rodney was a tremendous combination of speed. He had some jukes to him, and he also had some power to him.
He had power, for sure, yeah.
Well, later in his career, it became a power back. He kind of got rid of the jukes and the quicks, and he just became a plotter and a power back like Otis Anderson was.
Because of his knee.
Because he had a degenerative knee. And trust me, those Dan Reeves teams, when Rodney extended into those teams.
Yeah, that like 92 to 95.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, Rodney, Dave Brown was the quarterback for most of those games. Rodney was the Giants offense. Let's not kid
ourselves.
Well,
you had the 1 year when Phil was still there.
93.
That was the Cowboys' first Super Bowl year,
93.
Right? When they had that big game, the Emmett had the separated shoulder game, and yep. the Giants.
I'll never forget that.
If they win that game, they get home field. Who knows what the heck
and
happens.
And they get a bye week.
Right, exactly.
And that team is going to the Super Bowl. I believe that.
Yeah, they could have.
I truly believe that. They would have avoided playing San Francisco out there at Candlestick. I think they would have gone. But that was the 1 year where, yeah, you know, that was Phil's last season, and actually he was voted to the Pro Bowl that year too. But Rodney, for the most part, it was right after that where, you know, he continued to play. And Rodney changed his game because of his knee, and he was basically the lifeblood of that Giants offense for several years. And so then, those are the guys.
Well, and then finally Leonard, you didn't mention him.
Oh, and Leonard.
He was very much, he was basically.
Joe Montana.
Well, he was basically.
Meet Leonard Marshall.
He was basically overshadowed by LT and Carl Banks in that era.
Yeah, the thing about Leonard, when Leonard was here, when they drafted him out of LSU, he was an oversized end who was supposed to play some defensive tackle.
Well, again, 3-4 defensive ends that can get pass rush like Bruce Smith did with the Bills, those are hard to come by,
right,
man. Whew.
So what happened was the Giants, and he played some tackle snaps. Then they decided, you know what? Lamar Leachman was the defensive line coach, and he used to just absolutely berate Leonard Marshall all the time. Really got on him hard.
And that's why he took it out on opposing players.
Well, eventually, yeah. Again, ask Joe Montana. And so Leonard wound
up. And the play Paul's talking about for the folks that
playoff
game. He knocked Joe Montana out of the NFC.
1990.
NFC title game, right?
Yeah.
Where that famous thing, Montana rolls right, Leonard Marshall comes from behind and basically just obliterates his shoulder.
Exactly.
Which basically changed the path of Joe Montana's career.
Correct. Yeah. And opened the door for Steve Young to become the guy.
He ended up going to Kansas City pretty much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Of course, the Giants won the Super Bowl that year in 1990 anyway. But the point about Leonard was, so then he got more serious with his conditioning, and they decided, okay, we're going to put you to defensive end.
Yeah.
And even though they were a 3-4 and Lawrence was a stand-up pass rusher, they played more of a traditional. Lawrence was a stand-up linebacker. He wasn't a stand-up defensive end. He was still more of a stand-up linebacker because they put him in coverage a lot, believe it or not. Lawrence could do anything. So
you're a big LT fan?
You think? So Leonard during his time with the Giants had like 80 sacks.
Yeah.
And in 1985 was the NFL Defensive Lineman of the Year.
Was he really?
He sure was.
Oh, I didn't know that either. I'm learning stuff today.
So Leonard, two-time Super Bowl champ. So that's my recap on those guys. All really good men, great Giants, and champions. So what more could you ask for?
Yeah, the only thing I'll say real quick is just to relate it back to today's football when you look at the running backs. Except for OJ, who did it for a while, and he was effective for a long time. You look at the careers of Joe Morris and Rodney Hampton, even going back then, man, these running back careers are just not very long.
Well, Joe broke his foot.
Well, of course, that's my point, though.
Yeah, broke his foot.
Running backs suffer injuries.
And Rodney broke his foot as a rookie.
Right, and he has
Joe broke his foot a few years in, and that's what basically, because then he was, his last year with the Giants, he was on injured reserve. And the following summer, he came back, and he didn't make the team. Parcells kept Otis Anderson instead. And Joe took a year off.
I'm sure he wasn't happy about that.
No. And Joe wound up going to the Browns.
Yeah, I mean,
he healed up and played with Cleveland.
His third year in the league at 24, he had 510 rushing yards. Then Paul, the two monster years, 1,300, then 1,500. Then he went down to 600. Then he had 1,000. And then
but the 600-yard was the strike season.
He only had 11 games
right.
that year, right.
Yeah.
Then he had 1,000 in 88, which is somewhat reduced production, right? He was down to only 3.5 yards per carry that year. And then at 28, done. He had one more year with Cleveland. You mentioned he had 289 rushing yards, and then his career fell off the thing. So fell off the cliff. So Lance, that would be my one takeaway as you look back at these guys' careers at kind of how, you know, running backs, it's just hard for them to last.
The
a
thing
long
with
time.
Joe that's interesting, he was a second round pick out of Syracuse, and the year they took him, the number one pick was Butch Woolfolk out of Michigan. Woolfolk was a real dancer. He never wanted to cut it upfield. He would constantly dance. And
I think that's a dance now. I mean, a song, right?
and Butch was the lead back initially as the number one pick. Well, because of his dancing and because he also had trouble holding on to the ball, Joe had some trouble holding on to the ball too.
Oh wow!
When he first got into the league,
16 games, he had 8 fumbles in 1983.
There's a problem.
Woolfolk. That's a lot.
He had greased hands.
That's like tiki territory.
So
right there.
Tell me
good.
About it.
Yeah.
So what happened? And Woolfolk did not necessarily have a great attitude. He was a bit selfish, and he liked to blame other people. He wasn't a good teammate, and so Parcells wound up turning to Joe. And that's when Joe eventually wound up seizing. I think it was Joe's third year, I believe.
Third,
when he finally became the lead back.
He started eight games that year.
Because the Giants sent Wolfolk to Houston.
Yeah.
He goes to Houston, becomes an H-back for the Oilers. He wasn't a running back for the Oilers anymore. They made him an H-back. Mm. And I think he caught 70 passes one year for Houston.
80. 80
was
for,
it 80?
80 for 814 in 1985.
Very
wow.
productive as an H-back.
That's interesting.
But not as a running back. Because, again, they'd hand him the ball and he'd spend about 5 seconds dancing before he would attack the line. I mean, Wolfolk had, for all of his talent and skill, he didn't know how to use it.
Lance, your take on the class real quick before we move on.
Well, I was going to say there was more of an emphasis on the running game when a lot of these running backs played. So it's understandable they get a little bit more of a workload. Their durability is not as lengthy as, not to say that we see a lot of backs have lengthy careers, but you see a lot of two-man backfields in today's game. Whereas,
well, Joe had Maurice Carthen.
But what I'm saying is there was a much bigger emphasis on the run game.
For
teams
sure.
ran the ball a lot more. So those guys got more work overall, whether it was one guy or multiple guys.
Yeah, I don't have the
compared
numbers.
Compared to the volume of passes.
Yeah, I don't have the numbers, Lance, but now you're probably getting like 55-45 pass run split on first downs. Back then it was probably like 75-25 run pass split.
Especially under Ron Earhart and Bill Parcells.
Yeah, for sure.
Sure. So, I mean, you're taking on more hits over the course of a game, especially if they're utilizing you as a key component on the offensive side of the ball. But I do think it says a lot about the Giants' ability to find the next successor, given all these guys that are going into the Ring of Honor, because all of these players were in the same time area that we're talking about.
They were all in a 10-year span. They were all between 85 and 95.
So, I mean, I think it speaks volumes of the organization's ability to either acquire or draft somebody when all of a sudden 5 years went by, Joe Morris couldn't do it anymore. All right, we'll then bring in Otis Anderson, and then we'll get Rodney Hampton ready, and then the guys that even followed Rodney Hampton. So, that to me is one of the biggest takeaways. And I think Leonard Marshall probably is the most overlooked member of this class. I think he, as you mentioned, John, when you look at all those great defensive players on those teams in 86 and 90, I don't want to say that he's like the stepchild, but I don't think he's brought up to the forefront as much as some of those other players. So I was glad to see Leonard Marshall finally get his due, at least within the context of the Giants organization. Asking it to happen within the confines of the NFL, maybe a stretch, but at least within the organization, I do think that he deserves some notoriety.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There. 201-939-4513. Let's switch gears here. Didn't mean to go that long on that, but Paul gave us great information. It was fantastic. That was really, really good. Jeff and I kind of sped by it at the start of the show yesterday, so I'm happy we got a chance to take a little bit more time on it today. So we're going to now move ahead in time to the current time. We have one guy on hold. I want to get to James and Georgia Pearson, and then I'm going to ask the question to Paul Lance that I didn't get to on Monday. So let's go to James in Georgia. He's up next. James, what's going on?
Nothing much, Kev. How y'all doing?
We're good, man.
You all right?
I just got a couple things about training camp and a couple things that y'all were talking about over the last couple days.
All right, go ahead.
I think the Kenny Galladay situation – a lot of people are looking at it, and it comes down to the points per dollar for me. And I think that everybody's, like, worried that he's not producing in training camp, but we got to see what happens during the regular season. And I think y'all put a number, like, if he has, say, 8 touchdowns or something.
You would like to see Kenny Galladay surpass 1,000 yards receiving. That's what I think is a nice target number for him. To try to hit.
1,000 yards and at least 6 touchdowns. He needs to be a number one. He's getting paid as a number one. He needs to be a number one.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to lose a mind if he has 5 touchdowns. Yeah, if he has like 3, it's a problem.
Okay.
But you know,
okay.
5 or more, I think okay. I'd
But
be
1,000 yards is a real important number.
I think that's an important number.
I
yes.
totally agree.
I don't think the number of receptions is necessarily huge, but I think you need a good yards per catch, and I think you need 1,000 yards.
You know what? And maybe, Lance, you talk to some people through Sirius around the league. Maybe you have an answer to this that I just haven't discovered yet, and I think I need to make a phone call and find out. Was Kenny Golladay a productive training camp and or practice player in Detroit in the years when he put up back-to-back 1,000-yard
yeah,
seasons?
Good question.
Or has he always been one of those guys who just showed up on game day? Okay?
Right, and he spoke
it's a fair question.
Yeah, and he spoke the other day. He didn't seem all that concerned with how training camp was going when he was at the podium.
He didn't.
Yesterday or 2 days ago,
He also did say, however, that he thinks he's his own worst critic.
Yes.
And when he doesn't do well, he has a lot of pride in what he does.
Right.
So I need to make a phone call. Lance, do you know? Have you heard? Have you talked
to people? No, I haven't heard anything specifically. I mean, I certainly haven't heard people rave about his work ethic, if that's what you're trying to get at. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't a hard worker in Detroit. I also think it's important to note there are some guys that don't lay everything out on the line in practice
that's
and then show
point.
Up in games.
That's exactly
or
it.
Or vice versa. So that's another reason why I wouldn't read too much into it. How many times have we seen a Giants player put up great numbers or acrobatic catches in practice and then it doesn't translate to games? So that's more of a reason why I don't get caught up in what a guy does in practice with the flair of it all.
Well, here's why it's important.
I would say this too. I'm not for a guy that has a track record of success in regular season games. I'm not worried for a guy that hasn't made it yet and he's doing nothing in camp when he needs to do something to prove himself.
Right.
Those guys, I maybe have more concern about
agree.
Because that you know your butt's on the line now. I'm not a big fan of these, he's a gamer, he doesn't do well in practice things. I think that eventually catches up with guys
the
road.
It can.
I mean, you look at
you don't
these,
want too many of them.
I mean, you look at all these guys that never practice, but they play, right? Eventually, like DeAndre Hopkins, like it seems to kind of catch up with them at some point. But again, that's just, you know, different guys, different situations.
Here's
I think
the thing,
that's
though. Just more of a health or durability factor for some
no,
of those guys.
100%
yeah.
true. Yep,
yeah,
I'm
well,
with you on that.
Some of it is, and some of it is they're just not good practice players.
Right.
Now, I will tell you this. I will make a call out to Detroit. I know somebody out there. I will make a phone call, and I will ask, and if they tell me that he was never a very productive training camp player and was not a spectacular practice player but still put up 1,000-yard seasons, then I will have absolutely no fear about what's going on right now. I will not. The fact that he's been a bit inconsistent this summer won't bother me. But
right.
if they tell me that he was a very good practice player and he was really good at camp and those summers foreshadowed 1,000-yard seasons, I would be a little bit more concerned.
All right, James, question number 2.
I was just going to say the Richie James route, that vertical zig that he did, that was a good route he made up there on the fly. I think the 4 Giants draft picks that have 2 rings should one day make the Ring of Honor. I know y'all was talking about that the other day.
Who's that?
And last point, I will...
No, James, who? Names, give me names.
Oh, names? Tuck, O.C., Jacobs, and Bradshaw.
Oh, Tuck and O.C. are there.
Tuck and O.C. are in. Jacobs and Bradshaw are not.
Oh, they're already on there?
Yep. Tuck and O.C. are in. They went in 16 and 17, I believe, or 15 and 16,
oh, really?
Maybe, something like that. The only guy I throw out there, too, I think Victor Cruz will get up there eventually. I think even though it was only a few years, I think he had a big enough of an impact, and he was
right.
Super Bowl winner. My guess is that Cruz will get up there at some point.
Right, I forgot about Tuck and O.C. But last point, the Giants let one get away in the draft, and what's his name that's on the Eagles?
Jordan Davis?
No, N'Kobe Dean, the middle linebacker.
Oh, from Georgia.
He had a guy projected that first round, and, you know, you didn't take him in the third when he's sitting right there. That's the part of the, you know, same old Giants things that they do sometimes, but, you know, love the team. That one might hurt them one day, but hopefully not.
Thank you, James. Appreciate the call, man. Look, we got to see what N'Kobe Dean does. And look, I had him as a second-round guy. Some people had him in the first rounder. I thought he was a second rounder. His size worried me a little bit. He's really undersized, and he had some injury things going on. So yep. I had him as more of a second-round guy. But look, we have to see what happens if Josh Azudu is your starting left guard for the next 8 or 9 years. Then I'm not feeling bad about that pick.
You shouldn't.
No. So, I mean, is he going to be that guy? I don't know. Is N'Kobe Dean going to be awesome, or is he going to be an okay player? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Well, I think the question that I would have liked to have asked was, does the caller feel that way simply because he wound up going to the Eagles?
Right, that's a good point.
Because he's in the division. So if he doesn't go in the division, do you have the same feeling? And I'm not saying that Dean is not going to turn out to be a productive player, but whenever you play that game of, well, the Giants could have gone in this direction, you have to look at the player they chose and the impact that player is going to have on the roster, and also whether or not they had the need for a guy like Dean, and does he fit into what Wink Martindale would have asked him to do or would have wanted to do. See, when you're not privy to the conversations in the draft room about the Giants' viewpoint of Dean, it's hard to label it as the Giants passed up on the guy or the Giants overlooked the guy. They may have not had much of an interest in the guy. So he was never on their radar. Therefore, it's not much of a conversation point, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Right. We just don't know how he was graded on their board and how he would fit in what they're trying to do. And again, we don't know what the medical group had to say about him. Obviously, it wasn't just the Giants, right? No other team in the NFL.
Him, yeah.
Every team in the NFL passed on him at least once, some twice, some three times. So, again, we have to see what N'Kobe Dean does. I think, and it pains me to say this, the Eagles, I think, do a really nice job evaluating and drafting good talent in the draft. I just think they know how to. I think Howie Roseman does a nice job doing a lot of trades, moving around, maximizing value in those trades. I think they do a really nice job building their roster down there.
They also create some great depth, too.
They do, yeah.
I think that's what the Eagles are very
effective
at.
They have like a bunch of first and second round picks that are backups for them right now. I mean, it's crazy.
They've got the most overall depth, in my opinion, in the division.
Yeah, agreed.
Overall.
100% agree.
But what is their quarterback?
And that's always the ultimate equalizer, right?
I'm not a Hurts guy.
I know.
But go around the rest of the units, it's hard to argue.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though, Paul. The Eagles could play Paul Dottino football this year. They could play good defense. They could run the ball a lot.
And have Hurts just manage games.
And they did that late last season. Mm-hmm. That helped them get to the playoffs.
In fact, the Eagles might actually play on the Paul Dottino blueprint this year.
Well, here's the other thing, though.
You should see the look on Paul's face. He's
disappointed.
Much,
yeah,
he's
well,
so
because they're in the division.
Right now, Lance, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, because he'd rather you talk about the Baltimore Ravens playing that style of football than the Philadelphia Eagles, because the Ravens are in the AFC North. He's not worried about the AFC North. He's only worried about the NFC East.
The caller's name, what was his name? The
guy James and George.
James, I would ask one other thing.
Well, he's gone. I let him go.
Oh, he's already gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would ask one other thing, though, about him. Obviously, he can't answer this. We just heard, we've heard the coaches, you and I particularly, John, talk about the devaluation, if you will, of linebackers, especially in this game today. Now, N'Kobe Dean was not necessarily, he had range as a run stopper, even though he's the smallest side. I'm not so sure how significant a role he might have had in Wink Martindale's defense.
Now, really, so that's what I was getting at earlier.
Now,
that's what I mentioned.
Really smart player, though. That's the one thing I've heard from a million people about N'Kobe Dean. Like, he picks things up.
Understood.
Really fast, great instinct. So I think he would figure it out. But yeah, look, 100%. And it's funny. And again, we have a couple more calls in line. I want to get to you. 201-939-4513. You talk about valuing positions, right? We saw Derwin James. He's been, doing his hold in where he's at training camp not practicing. At training camp for the Chargers this year, he got a big money contract. And I think it's showing how, and we just saw Minkah Fitzpatrick get a big contract from the Steelers. Mm-hmm. Was it last offseason, I think, Lance?
Yeah.
Or was it this offseason? I don't remember.
Or I think it was earlier this offseason.
It was earlier this offseason. Yeah. Getting almost close to that 18 to 20 million average per year number for safeties, which is a big number.
A lot of money.
But these are not, they're almost taking on that star money position that they have in college now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they play in the middle of the field. If you want them to blitz, great. Stop the run as a linebacker, great. Play one-on-one against a slot receiver, great. Oh, you got to play one-on-one against a regular wide receiver? Okay, you can do that too. So I think we're seeing the value of, call it the safety position, but that versatile, do-everything, 220-pound guy that can play in the middle of the field, that can, never has to be taken off the field, that's becoming closer to a premium position because it's a guy you can use in a million different ways.
See, years ago, you know, you talk about the Ronnie Lotts of the world, the Joey Browners of the world, those kinds of guys, Steve Atwater,
I was actually going to say
that. There have been some absolutely sensational, dominant safeties and defenses before. I mean, you know, Fencick and Dorson with the Bears back in 85. There have been over the years.
Hell, go back to Brian Dawkins and John Lynch if you want.
No doubt.
In the early 2000s,
so the point is, the game has had dominant safeties before. There have been many a years with many a good defenses where the safety was the leading tackler.
Oh, Leroy Butler, Darren Woodson, okay, for Dallas, all those guys.
Right.
100%.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting part, though, John, is that as important as those safeties were, they weren't getting paid the percentage of the monies that they're getting paid now.
Because it's more of a
because
the cap has also gone up.
But I'm talking about percentage. The safeties were getting a lower percentage of the cap than they're getting now because now they're playing different positions.
Right, and it's more of a passing
game.
That's
the key.
Right, that's why I wanted to say it's not necessarily the safety position. It's those guys that can do everything.
Yes.
That are becoming valuable.
It's the fact
more.
That they're not necessarily safeties. They're like chameleons.
Right, this is kind of how we talked about Isaiah Simmons, right?
Yes.
When he came out 2 years ago. That's how I personally, his ideal ceiling was that for me. I know you saw him a little bit differently than I did, but that's how I saw him for me in terms of how he would wind up being most valuable. Now, I think Kyle Hamilton is more of a traditional safety. I don't think he necessarily has the side-to-side quicks that a Derwin James has to kind of do those things, but I think a guy like Xavier McKinney is probably closer to that category. So we have to see how the Giants use him now, Lance, to see if he can kind of, you know, get into that value to the team level that Derwin James.
It's
has.
Almost like we shouldn't call that particular guy a safety anymore.
Well, and college,
he's a weapon.
And Lance,
right.
And Lance, on college depth charts, they don't call that player a safety
anymore.
No, they
don't.
Have the separate,
no, they call like a hybrid guy
type
of thing.
The star or the money player is
right.
Is
well,
what
Dane
they call
Belton played that type of a role at Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Money Badger.
That's what they called it there.
Yeah, Money
Badger. Tyron Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. The Money Badger. Mm-hmm. The Honey Badger. And the Money Backer was the guy who the Giants picked up from the Cardinals, Buchanan.
Yeah,
the Honey Badger
does
make a lot of money, so I guess you could combine both.
But that's what happened. They you're right. They actually created a name for the position because it's not a standard safety anymore.
Correct.
Well, that's why I call them weapons, meaning you can utilize them wherever you see fit within your scheme. Just like a running back who's a wide receiver is a weapon. I don't necessarily have to call him just a running back. I call him somebody who you're going to move around and you're going to maximize their talent.
Or even Lance, a guy like Deebo Samuel, right? Who they use in a million different ways. Yeah,
100%. Mm-hmm. Or even Christian McCaffrey, for example, who gets a boatload of catches as much as he does runs when he's healthy. I think the million-dollar question with Derwin James is, can he stay healthy?
Yep.
That still remains to be seen, considering he missed about two full seasons nearly because he only played five games in 2019. But the Chargers still believe that. Why let him walk on the market? Why go down the road of the franchise tag if we could lock him up to something that is in sync to what other comparable players are getting? And remember, they have a very good defense right now. They have playmakers at a lot of levels that are locked up.
Oh, yeah, they're talented.
So I think their philosophy was, let's keep this core together under Brandon Staley. Let's see what they can accomplish before we maybe go into a different direction. But James is worth the label. There's no doubt about it. When healthy, he's as good as advertised.
Oh, yeah.
It's just about whether or not you're going to get 15 games out of him every single year. He still needs to prove that.
100%.
Yeah.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Season tickets are on sale for 2022 for the New York Giants. In addition to ticket savings, membership benefits include access to exclusive events, experiences, pre-sales, more. Lock in your seat starting at just $100. 888-NYG-1925 or visit Giants.com/tickets for more information. Back to the phones. Dennis is up in Buffalo. Dennis, what's going on?
I was wondering about Brand Van Pelt. I know he's before the Lawrence Taylor era, and I was wondering what his status is. I understand he was a five-time All-Pro.
He passed away.
No, I think he means in terms of the Ring of Honor, not
oh, he's
in terms
there.
Of his yeah. life
he's
status.
Up there.
Yes, correct. Yes, he is in the Ring of Honor. Yes.
Okay. Do you think you can ever get him into the Pro Bowl?
The Hall of Fame?
The Hall of Fame you're talking about.
Boy, we're batting 1,000.
I'll tell you what, man. If Brad Van Pelt could figure out how to make the Pro Bowl this year, I'd be really impressed.
That's impressive. Yeah. I mean, if you could get the fan vote up, I'd say that's a heck of an accomplishment.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, thank you.
Okay, bye. Appreciate it, Dennis.
That one ran right over his head.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, fellas, I don't think we could possibly follow up that call with any sensible conversation, but I want to reverse back before the phone call.
Well, I want to give a fact for a second. Brad Van Pelt wasn't in the inaugural Ring of Honor class. He was in the Ring of Honor class in 2011. He made it in with Alex Webster, Brad Van Pelt, Carl Banks, Mark Bavaro, and Dave Jennings in 2011.
And very justified.
Oh, yeah. Excellent player. No question.
Probably the best cover linebacker of his time. There wasn't a tight end or running back that could create space off of him. Because remember, he was a safety at Michigan State when he came out. And so he had tremendous cover skills. Very smart player, too, and had great length. All good things that you need to cover people. But here's what I want to do. I want to hit the rewind button and go before that call. The safety position, according to the franchise tag, believe it or not, John, for all that we talked about with the new value on the current safety position.
It's reasonable.
It's now no longer a safety anymore.
What is it, $12 million?
It's $12.9 million, which, believe it or not, is only ahead of your special teams player, which is your kicker or your punter, your running back, and your tight end. It is the fourth lowest tagged player.
Here's the problem.
On the roster. Is that nuts?
Well, here's what I'll say, though. Linebacker would also be less than safety, but linebacker in the franchise tag includes those outside pass rushing linebackers.
The edges.
Like, if you included those inside linebackers, my bet is that safety would probably be, if you had a separate category for them, safety would probably be ahead of them, and they'd be probably close with defensive tackles, right? Like, defensive tackles and safeties would probably be close to each other.
Defensive tackles, believe it or not, are fifth at 17.3.
Are defensive tackles and defensive ends separated out in franchise?
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I take it back then. Never mind.
But here's the thing.
My fault.
Edge rushers are not separated out.
Right.
The safeties are not separated between your free safety and your strong safety pseudo linebacker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Special teams, 5.2 is your tag for special teams. But that doesn't have anything to do with punters and kickers.
Right. Well, that,
they're just special teams guys. What I'm saying is they need to revise the tag sheet.
Well, no, I mean, it's going to go up every year. And now with Minka coming in at 18 a year, Derwin's coming in at, like, I'm looking at SpotTrack for over the cap for these numbers.
Right.
You know, Minka average per year is 18. Jamal Adams is like 17. Harrison Smith is 16. Justin Simmons just got 15 a year. Now throwing Derwin James. That number, I think, next year is probably
going to go up
a lot.
I think the point that I'm making, though, is because of the specialization of what we're doing with all our different packages, mm-hmm. and we're creating different positions, this chart is not going to last any much longer.
Well, no, I mean, it changes every year.
Yeah. But aside from the numbers changing and maybe some of the rankings changing, I think they need to create more positions on the chart.
Matt Judon argued for that, if you remember. Mm-hmm. When he was given the franchise tag, I think it was with Baltimore, he argued that
he
was not a linebacker or a defensive end. He was a combination of both, and they wound up settling. They found the middle ground. So
they
any
should
player
create edge rusher.
That
they
has an issue.
Edge rusher should be separated from inside linebacker. Totally agree.
Or you're going to have, once again, the players go down the road of just arguing and maybe coming down to a settlement with their team.
Well, Leonard Williams had the whole defensive end, defensive tackle.
Correct,
thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and absolutely. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. But here's the other reason why I don't think they're going to go that crazy over it. Because why wouldn't they have done it already, A? And B, it doesn't affect a good portion of the players' union. There's very few players that are impacted by the tag.
Oh, yeah.
So if you ask the union overall, they're not going to go to bat for how many guys fall under the category of these tweeners that we're talking about? Even less of the players that are impacted by the franchise
tag. It helps the NFL, for example, to have inside linebackers combined with outside linebackers.
Sure, they're not going to push for it.
And now, it does raise the franchise value of inside linebackers, but remember, very rarely do inside linebackers get franchise tagged.
Edge rushers, who are
qualified as stand-up rushers and outside linebackers, they get franchised a lot, so that'll then affect the number that way.
The one that I think probably has the most merit for being changed is wide receiver, because slot wide receiver has become a legitimate position. And you see now some guys
who
are significant impact players as a slot.
Well, that helps the slot guys.
Yeah, they would make more than had they been designated as a slot guy.
Yeah, remember, the slot guys get included with the outside wide receivers now.
Yes.
So they're already up there.
So there's there's an incentive, Paul, for them to be labeled just a wide receiver then. Why would they want to change that?
They wouldn't want to have it separated
No,
out.
I think the owners would want it.
Oh, yeah. They would, yeah. Sure. But, yeah,
the owners would want that separate because...
Something tells me, though, the owners are not going to want to open up that Pandora's box.
Yeah, probably
because
not.
Then the players are like, well, if you're going to separate that out, then we should separate this out. You know what I mean?
I'm just for the damn list to make sense.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Well, yeah, but once again, I think it's just, Paul, it goes back to if you don't have a high volume of players impacted by this, they're not going to change it.
Well, they probably won't. I just want it to make sense.
And offensive that's line all. Is split up by guard and tackle, or is it all
offensive line? No.
Yeah, no, see, it's across the board.
See, that's the other one you would split up, is
absolutely.
Guard and tackle,
absolutely. We've
right?
talked yeah, about that. Sure. And center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Well, you could probably include centers with the guards. Those numbers are usually pretty close.
You know?
But yeah, but again, centers and guards love this because they want to get the money that tackles.
Of course they do. Yeah.
They're not complaining. Right.
And the corners.
That's
But again, tackles, slot corners.
But again, tackles are franchised more often than guards
yes,
and centers are. So anyway, 201, that was kind of off the rails there.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. That was fine.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top
not
of it.
Like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because he didn't need it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
201-939-4513. All right, before we get to our next two calls, I'm going to ask you guys the questions, and Scott and Charlie will get to you. But this is the question I was asking on Monday, but we ran out of time. And I'll get to all three of these guys, Pearson, don't worry. So Jeff and I answered this question yesterday to start off the show, and it was, what is most top of mind for you? And you can talk about something. If you're excited about it, that's fine. If it's something you're worried about, that's fine too. Jeff took the injuries, specifically depth on the offensive line right now in terms of injuries, is the thing he's thinking about the most. In terms of what I'm thinking about the most, I took the cornerback position and whether or not this group can handle all the man-to-man coverage that Wink is likely going to ask them to play. So I will let's go Lance first. Lance, what's the thing that's top of mind most for you when you're thinking about this Giants team heading into preseason game number 2?
Well, I believe I've actually written about this in a recent Cover 4.
Oh, there
and
you go.
It's really, I mean, right in line with what you were talking about. I've said all offseason the secondary is the biggest question mark because of Wink Martindale's defense. And while I don't put a whole lot of stock and substance in preseason games, I do think what we got a taste of, at least with Aaron Robinson, is that when he's going to be put out on an island, teams are not going to hesitate targeting him, and he's going to be put in a spot where he's going to have to make plays, especially when you don't have James Bradbury in the equation anymore. So I don't think those fears have been allayed as a result of what we've seen in camp and one preseason game. And I think that that group overall, whether it's piecemeal, whether it's a committee, however you want to label it, you know, those guys are going to have to step up because if they don't get home with the pass rush consistently, quarterback's going to take chances down the field and the onus is going to be on the cornerback. So I would put that group overall, you know, even with Darnay Holmes showing some flashes, we haven't seen it enough in games. So that to me, I think, is the biggest looming question mark over this team.
Yeah, and the point I made, Paul, to Jeff on the show yesterday was, well, you want to test? If the Bengals play Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd on Sunday, that's not Nixon. I don't know what his first name was for the Patriots last week that was catching all his deep passes. Like, he's what, the third string receiver?
How about
receiver?
Wilkerson, too?
Exactly. Who? So I think we'll have it's not mean. Like, I don't think anybody in the Patriots knows.
His parents love him.
I don't think anyone in the Patriots knows David Sills is on the Giants.
No,
you know,
I'm
you
sure.
know what I mean?
I'm
or
sure.
Alex Bachman. I mean, it's the same level of guy.
Yeah.
So what are these Giants cornerbacks going to do about a group of true, I mean, that might be the best wide receiver trio of any team in football. Like,
certainly
so
one of the best, yeah.
We're going to see, like, if they play, and we'll see. My guess is that they're all going to play a little bit.
I hope so.
we'll get to see how the Giants' corners can do against that group.
We need to see if the Bengals are practicing today and see what's coming out of there, if they have any information on snaps.
Burrow is practicing this week, but again, I doubt he'll play.
Well, but that changes the equation as well, though, based on, you know, who's going to be under center.
True,
too.
But you can still watch, even if
you
the,
can still
even
watch
if the
one
quarterback
on
doesn't
oh, sure.
complete the pass, yeah. you can see if the corner can stay with yeah. the receiver. Or not,
and you know, John, to be frank with you, you know this, I've been very high on Adoree Jackson. I think he was underrated last year. I thought he played better than a lot of people.
Oh,
did.
No, and the point I made is that Adoree Jackson is the one guy I'm not that worried about.
And I'm very
about.
High on Aaron Robinson, who had a horrible first quarter in New England. He had a really, really bad night. And I don't believe that that's him. I think it was an aberration. I still have tremendous confidence in him. So I'm not shaken by that. I was disappointed, but I'm not shaken. So that's how I'm going into it. So I appreciate the question about the corners.
So you have no concern about the Giants cornerbacks?
Well, I think beyond those two, I think Darnay Holmes has had a hell of a camp. So I really feel good about him at slot. But who's the fourth corner right now with Flott hurt? Who's the fourth corner?
It could be the guy they just brought in from Buffalo, right?
He's a special teamer, I think. From what I understand, he's going to be a special teamer.
He's been a practice squad guy, too. I mean,
he's
had any regular
teamer.
Season.
He made a really nice play on the ball in practice the other day.
But what
came off his guy.
I mean, Evans has shown out in the last week.
Yeah, I mean. And
is he possibly the fourth
and
corner?
And he hit a couple moments a couple weeks ago, too.
But who's the backup slot?
I mean, Khalil Dorsey's been playing that spot.
Really? I mean, you feel good about that?
Okay, so that
would certainly be an issue for me.
Okay, so you have more concern about cornerback depth than the starters per se.
Yes, right. Yes, I do. But for me, John, and I think this is such an intriguing team to me because I do think there is so much potential and there are so many possible answers for so many of these questions. So I just go back to what I said about a week or so ago, and I know so many people hit me up on Twitter. They don't care, but damn it. If you watch the game Thursday night, the Giants' special teams coverage units were horrible. They were horrible. They could not cover a kickoff or a punt worth a darn.
Yeah, but the guys that are doing that in the preseason might not even be on your team.
But who will the core coverage guys be?
Well, let me tell you this. If the Giants' biggest problem this year is covering punts and kicks, we're going to be in great shape.
I'm not giving that to you as my primary. What I'm giving it to you is
one
that's under the radar.
Oh, that's fine. No, but my question is, what is for you on what is top of mind
well, it's gotta
for
be
you
the,
right
it's
now?
It's got to be the offensive line.
Okay.
But we're talking about that for 10 years.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's
so I don't
okay.
want to talk
no,
about
okay,
it.
Well, but you
fine.
Could have emphasized
that's
that,
okay.
though. There's nothing wrong with
that's
that.
That's fine.
I don't want to talk about the offensive line because it's a bored topic. It's a dead
you.
Horse.
Okay, that's fine.
So I'd rather go to something that most
He'd
people...
rather talk about guys that are not going to make the 52.
No, I'd rather address a question that doesn't keep most people up at night but drives me nuts.
You. I got you.
And, no, and damn it, they better find a handful of core special teams guys who are going to do big things on specials because you know what? I'm going to tell you something right now, fellas. Even if this offense and defense are both middle of the pack in the NFL this year, if their special teams becomes a travesty, it will short-circuit any improvement that you expect to see in the one-loss record. It can really impact your team and throw your team off a cliff. It's one-third of the game.
It's not one-third of the game. Look at the number of plays each game. It's not one-third of the game.
I understand the point, John, but field position, ask Tom Coughlin. He'll tell you it is. Because field position impacts tremendously how you play defense and how you play offense.
How many times on average is there an actual return in a game? How many actual return plays are there where a guy actually returns a punt or a kick? Six?
There's not a ton of them.
Yeah, so how is six plays
there's
a third of the game?
Because everything you call in your playbook is based off of initial field position where you start your drive. And all it takes is one scoring drive most times to change the outcome of a game.
I know, but
it does.
But it's not a Paul, if it's six.
All right, forget the percentage.
Okay.
I don't care.
Okay.
Forget the percentage. I don't care. It's an important part of the game that can win or lose you several contests.
Ooh, I see.
It
I think
can.
Special teams maybe get you in one, maybe two games a year. Maybe. Especially if you take the kicking game out of it. If you take field goals out of it. Then, yeah, how many times does the team have a return for over 20 yards against you in a season? Like twice, three times?
Let's put it this way. One of the most valuable but unsung heroes in that second Patriots Super Bowl in Indianapolis with Steve Weatherford, who consistently, I think, what was it, on 5 or 6 punts, put them all inside the 10 and made Tom Brady and the Patriots go the length of the field every single time. If you don't think that was not a significant factor in winning that game, I'm sorry.
But you weren't talking about the punters. You're talking about the coverage units.
Yeah, but that's part of it. Because even if the ball is rolling down inside there, you have to have good kick coverage units to make sure that nothing does happen with that ball, that it gets downed, or that it does go out of bounds, or that if the fielder does decide to try to return it, he doesn't get anywhere. It's a big deal. Tilting the field is a very big deal, especially if your team is not great. The Giants are not great. They can't afford to be fighting upfield every week. They can't.
You.
They're just not good enough. That's all.
Okay, fair enough. Again,
it doesn't keep most people up at night,
mm-hmm.
but it gives me agita.
Everything keeps you up at
yeah,
night.
That's and true. Everything gives you agita.
But that's true. So. I'm crazy. I admit it. I'm like a coach and a GM. I stay up all hours of the night thinking about this stuff. It's what I do.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
201-939-4513. Hey, Paul, do you want to be a Giants suite partner? Don't miss your chance to experience agita in a premier hospitality experience. Watching Giant Games world-class concerts in 2022 as a Giants suite partner. Limited full-season locations are available. Or place a deposit for individual games. Call 888-NYG-1925 or visit giants.com/suites for more information. I wish we were on video right now, because what I would do, I'd have Pearson and like our graphic guys create a Paul Dottino agita chart. And every day when he comes on the show, we'd have it at like a different level.
A meter.
It would either be up and down like a thermometer, or it could be like a Richter scale or like an audio board where like it kind of, you know, goes left to right based on like the severity of the Tino's agita. And we'd have to come up with names for like the different categories, like slightly perturbed, like tense. Needed 10 miles today.
Disgusted.
Not sleeping.
Right.
Disgusted.
Right.
And then like and then comatose. Because when you get really bad, you're not angry anymore.
You're right.
You're comatose.
I get very numb.
Yeah. so
I have to.
So that would be the worst category. It would be numb.
Right. Numb. Yeah. I'm just glad like we haven't had video for a lot of years, because these last few years have been pretty tough.
Speaking of numb, let's go to Scott in New Mexico. He's up next. Scott, what's going on?
Hey, tell Paul, there are pills for agita, so you don't have to worry.
Oh, no. You don't want to me to ingest anything coming out of a bottle. That would not be a good idea.
Except
also,
for, like,
don't open
beverage.
The door for him to throw out a sponsor that's not associated with the show.
Thank you.
That's more of a reason you shouldn't pose that statement. Yeah.
Since Charlie's going to follow me, do you want me to talk longer so you speak to him less, or just my normal stuff?
Nah, Scott, just give me what
you
got.
Already gave him too much promotion,
yeah, correct,
Scott.
Yes.
So, I mean, you shot yourself in the foot right
there.
People
just clicked off the show is what they did.
Yeah.
And Charlie will be the last call, not the next call. Anyway, Scott, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, John, I agree with you that Victor Cruz should at some point be in that Ring of Honor, because even though, albeit he had a shorter window of opportunity, he was certainly impactful, and I think he should get onto that Ring of Honor shortly. But my question, I wanted to go back to 2019 in regards to Daniel Jones. I'm going to read something, and I want you guys to tell me where this disconnect is.
Uh-huh.
There were 25 quarterbacks in 2019. This is the year that Daniel Jones threw 20 touchdowns, I think 12 interceptions.
24 touchdowns, there, yeah.
Yeah. There were 25 quarterbacks who had thrown at least 20 passes that have traveled at least 20 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. Of those quarterbacks, no one has thrown on target, that's a pass considered catchable, more than Daniel Jones at 67.9%.
Was it just in 2019 you're talking about, in that one year?
Right.
Okay.
And I'm trying to figure something out.
No, I got you.
But no quarterback has completed fewer of his deep attempts than Jones, same year at 21.4%. What I'm saying is, or what I'm trying to figure out, is the Giants didn't have receivers who had separation. Two of the Giants, they rate receivers who have separation, and two of the receivers ranked in the top 10 of 2 yards or less separation. That was Slayton and Golden Tate. So we're going through this progression from year to year where John Mara has admitted they screwed up Daniel Jones. I was not a Daniel Jones guy in the beginning. I wanted Dwayne Haskins, may he rest in peace, to be the quarterback draft for the Giants, but that didn't work out. So when I looked at Daniel Jones and he started playing, I realized he throws a pretty good damn long ball. And my question really is, if that's the way he is and he can do that, the problem was that he didn't do very good on his second and third reads, but that started from his Duke days because he was trained to look at one receiver, throw the ball to that one receiver. It wasn't open, he couldn't do the second and third reads. And that's the way they did it at Duke. So the Giants knew that when they drafted him. But he throws an excellent long ball. So I'm trying to understand why they don't develop that skill, because what I'm seeing is a duplication of what Dable did with Buffalo.
I want to be clear, Scott. Develop. You're kind of all over the place. Develop what skill? Throwing deep or throwing to the second and third reads?
Okay, being the second and third reads, of course, and then also to be able to throw the ball down the field.
You need time to do that.
Which he's very good at.
Yeah, but you need time to do that, and the offensive lines that have been here for the last several years have not been really good enough to give him a consistent opportunity.
And for your point about the second and third read, I'll give you an example. In that rookie year, if memory serves me correctly, they were playing the Minnesota Vikings. There was a play in the red zone, and he must have – I think he threw to one of the backup running backs. Guys, I don't know if you recall. And he looked at like four different guys before he passed the ball. So, I mean, that was an example where he actually went through the entire trajectory of his reads. So there's been some examples that they have
developed. But not consistently. And what I'm saying is – can they open up this offense a little bit more with the receivers they have? If Tony plays well and Wandell Robinson plays well and they get some effort from Bellinger and Galladay, even if Galladay only has 500 yards, I won't care if Wandell Robinson has 1,000 yards and the Giants finish the season at 10-7. It doesn't make any difference because it's all about wins and losses. But the key is, as John, you've put numerous times, is the quarterback. So can they open up the offense so they can take advantage of the skills of being able to go down the field with the offensive line they have? And that was my basic question to you guys.
Thank you, Scott.
All right.
Appreciate the call.
Thanks.
Yep. Look, I think they're going to try to. I think Daniel's being more consistent with that stuff, too. And I'm going to go – you talk about that. People always talk about the 2019 season, right? And he just plays like he does in 2019. He had three games that year where he had combined just those three games. He had 13 touchdowns and zero interceptions. One was against Detroit, the worst team in football, second worst defense in the league. One was against Washington, fifth worst defense in the league, one of the worst teams in football. The other one was against the Jets, one of the worst teams in football. Where'd they all draft that year? In like the top six or seven. So you have to, I think, take some of those numbers from that year, which was a small sample size. He only started 12 games that year. So I think you have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt in terms of how that year went. And yeah, Daniel was shown the ability to throw the deep ball. He threw the deep ball great 2 years ago. Last year, his deep ball accuracy wasn't nearly as good as it was back in 2020, for example. Mm-hmm. So that's a small sample size number, and there's a large variation of that from year to year. You know, whenever you have a stat that's focused on the smaller number of plays a stat is based on, the more divergence you're going to have from year to year. It's not going to be as consistent, right? So I think he just has to become more consistent at it. And to Paul's point, protection has a lot to do with it too. And him having wide receivers that are going to help him on those plays also.
Make plays for your quarterback.
Yeah.
Giants have led the league or been right up there amongst the league leaders in drops in each of the last several years. This is not a secret. We all know that. And quite honestly, okay, I don't care who it is. You and I mentioned Galladay before, John, saying you got to get 1,000 yards out of him. I'll tell you what, okay? If he does that, he is a headache player. And how many times have you heard me say, you've got to have headache players? Well, Barkley should be a headache player this year, he was as a rookie.
If he can stay
healthy.
Be.
Yep. He should be. What they plan for him in this offense, he should be a headache player. And the Giants need Galladay or Tony, or Robinson, one of their receivers has to become a headache player.
No, 100%.
And if Galladay's not going to do it, then Tony or Robinson better have 800 or 900 yards and average 16, 17 yards a catch, because somebody in that receiving core needs to step up and be a headache player to complement Barkley as a headache player so that defensive coordinators every Monday night are going to sit up all night and say, oh my God, we got to deal with two headache players when we game plan for this team. That's going to be the kind of thing that helps bring the Giants to another level as opposed to just trying to get to mediocrity.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and say hi to Jonathan Westchester. Jonathan, what's up?
Hey, how are you guys?
What's up, Jonathan?
Well, first, my family and I had the pleasure of meeting Paul at the Giants training camp this year, and Paul, it was great to speak with you.
Nice to talk to you, too. Thank you.
So I wanted to bring up two guys who could end up sneaking onto the 53. I wanted to get your thoughts on them because I thought they both looked good in the first preseason game.
Sure.
First one is safety Trenton Thompson. I thought he showed good closing speed, both on the sack he had and in coverage. And the second guy is an offensive lineman, Devery Hamilton. I know PFF grades, you know, should be taken with a grain of salt, but I saw he was the Giants' highest-rated player with a 90.1 overall grade. So I wanted to get your thoughts on those two guys.
No, good stuff, Jonathan. Look, I think Devery has done a nice job. He was on the practice squad last year. He's a guy that I think they've developed a little bit, and I think with all the injuries inside, I think he's got a shot. If he's not going to be practice squad, maybe be that last offensive lineman on, depending on the health of Azudu and things like that. But if Azudu and Bredesen are going to be on, it sounds like if they're healthy, those guys are going to be on. Getting a third interior guy might be tough, but if it is, and maybe Hamilton can go out there and play a little bit of tackle too. I know he has some position flex in him. But yeah, I think he's, of the guys on the roster, if they think he can go out there and play well with tackle for them, I think he could be a guy that can maybe sneak on. You know, as for Thompson, you know, he hasn't flashed a ton, Paul, in practice. I haven't noticed him a ton. He's had a couple pass breakups. He did have that nice blitz, as Jonathan mentioned, in the game. But look, I think behind the two starting safeties, it's still pretty wide open right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think Andrew Adams is probably got a lead to be the third safety.
Probably just because of his experience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I would think so. And then Corker maybe as the four, but he hasn't, outside of a couple of flashes during camp, you know, he had a penalty in the game the other night.
Yeah, in fact, Julian Love went out of his way to point Trenton Thompson out during his media availability 2 days ago.
Now, he did. Now, here's what I'll tell you about Thompson, okay? 6 years... because he took advantage of redshirt and COVID at San Diego State. And from what I understand, the reason that the Giants even brought him in was for special teams and that he could be a dark horse as a special teams demon. Remember Keon Crossan was brought here because of his association with Joe Judge.
Well, he was very good on
because
special
he's
teams.
An outstanding special
as
teams
gunner. Yeah.
And a guy who could get down there and not only tackle but could also down the ball. Well, you heard me talk about special teams as a concern before. You're going to need one of those guys who is just a special teams demon. He may not be able to play anything else, but maybe he's really an ace on specials. My understanding was he was brought here as a potential one of those guys. So I don't think he makes the team so much as a safety as much as special teams.
Yeah, no question about it. No question about it. Lance had to pop off, by the way, to do Sirius. That's why you haven't heard from him in a while. If you wonder why Lance hasn't been chiming in, that's why. So he's off to do, I don't know who he's hosting with Sirius today, but he'll be on with somebody at 3 o'clock.
I just thought
I'm
he
sure.
hit his head on the bottom of the table.
Well, I've never seen you happier.
No, that's not true.
Now,
folks,
no,
Lance and I get along.
I know, I'm just teasing.
Yeah, but you say that and people think, you know? Anyway.
Okay, real quick, let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. He will wrap us up. Charlie, see, I got Lance out of here, so we didn't fight with him when you called in. What's up?
Perfect. Hey, Paul, I'm a headache caller. So
yes,
remember that.
You are. But you know, we talk about headache players in a good way. You're a headache caller in a bad way. It's different.
Actually, you keep Lance up at night every week.
That's true.
Hey, look, Ring of Honor, Will Beattie should have been there, but I'm hoping next year.
Shut up.
Right?
Next.
Why do you do that, Charlie?
Because he's an idiot. Next.
Why? He's a great player.
You destroy any kind of niceties that we want to throw your way when you do that.
He was trying to be funny. He's not serious. At least I hope he's
all
not.
Right. Hey, top of the mind, okay? The top of the mind to me is injuries. That's top of the mind. We got so many guys injured. Like, we got two more practices this week. We got another whole week of practices before the last preseason game. Then we got 2 weeks of practices before the first game.
You just contradicted yourself, Charlie. You have a lot of time till week one. So a lot of these guys have time to heal.
Yeah,
that's
but
the point.
Also, we have more. Yeah, but we have more practices for other guys to get injured again.
Yeah, but what coach has been taking it easy on these guys. Remember, John, this week he pulled back a padded practice and made it to shells because he wanted to make sure guys are staying okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. We got so many guys injured. And the thing is with special teams, Paul, don't worry. We've got two guys that right now are, you know, are injured, Belton and my son, Millitime, who will be very good on special teams. Yeah, Millitime.
Doesn't he have to do something to get a nickname?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
No, he's done something already.
Has he?
Yeah. He's from Maine. That's what he's done.
Yeah. He got a touchdown in the scrimmage. And also, they got rid of Hall, who was his competition for the H-back position. So I think he's doing pretty good right now. I mean, he's going to be a great special teams player. So when Belton will be, and he might be your other safety that you forgot to mention him.
Charlie, be quick. We got to go. Last point.
Yeah, that's pretty much the last point. I'm just worried about injuries. That's about it.
And that's fair.
I totally understand, Charlie. Thanks for the call. And look, I'm concerned about that too. And that was Jeff's answer yesterday, so I get that. Not Charlie. That makes sense. I can't believe I just said those words.
Well, I did. Again, it's a very intriguing team, John.
Yeah.
It really is. So we'll see.
Paul, good stuff.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Lance, good stuff. I totally agree, Lance. Thank you very much for being with us today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I'm John Schmelk. We're back again tomorrow at 2, Friday at 2, and then next week and the week after, folks, they're doing some afternoon practices, so we're going to move the show start time to 3. That's starting on Monday, August 22nd, and that'll go through September 2nd. So those 2 weeks, we're going to have shows at 3 o'clock each day because, again, there's practices from, like, 1:45 to 2:45, 12:30 to 2:30. We don't want to, you know, do the show during practice. We can't tell you what
happens.
Doesn't make any sense. So, again, this week, Thursday, Friday, 2 p.m., game Sunday. Next week and the week after that, 3 o'clock. For Dottino and Meadow, I'm Schmelk. We'll see you then. Adios.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.